Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Group Answers Podcast, a weekly show designed to resource, train, and encourage small group leaders. Each episode considers current trends and resources, as well as timeless truths and methods of discipleship. It's hosted by Brian Daniel and Chris Surratt. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the Group Answer Show. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt. So, Chris, welcome back. We're back on now. We're back in a regular stream. This is like our third recording in the last 3 weeks. We're finally got our act together. So it feels good to be in a rhythm again.
Yeah, it does. I'm glad we're able to do this on the regular, as the kids would say, in like 2010, probably. But you know what I'm really excited about right now, Brian? Honestly,
really is, baseball season.
Well, not quite. It's the almost down to at this point as we're recording it, it's the Sweet 16. Of the college NCAA tournament, men's and women's. I'm excited about both, and I'll tell you why in just a second. But I'm excited about the men's tournament. We talked about this in the last one, but my University of Houston Cougars, go Cougs, where I went to college, are they're still the favorites at this point to get to the finals. Now, I may be saying this and they lose tonight because they play tonight in the Sweet 16, but we'll see what happens. But as of right this second, they are picked to possibly win this thing. So I'm very excited about that. And then on the girls' side, did you know they do a girls' tournament at the same time, Brian Daniel?
I did know that. Yep. I think they play Tuesday, Wednesday on that one, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I know you went to the University of Kentucky. I don't think they have a girls program at University of Kentucky, but
Just kidding.
But anyways, they do that. And my oldest daughter's alma mater is the University of South Carolina.
Yes, it is.
Go Gamecocks. And they are undefeated.
The historic South Carolina Gamecocks, actually.
Yes, they may go the entire thing undefeated if they win it. So very excited.
That's not it, though, right? If they did that, would that not be 2 years in a row or something like that?
Did they go undefeated last year? I know they won it last year. But
I mean, sadly, I don't follow that as closely, but I do get the highlights, and it seems like I picked up something along those lines that they're chasing history, and only UConn, the old UConn teams had done it before, whatever it is. But they're – I think the word the kids use is dominant, or maybe that was our generation. But they're blowing and going. That's for sure.
If it's two seasons in a row, that's unbelievable. I mean, to go undefeated. What's the last? Did Indiana, they did it right under the legendary coach?
Well, Bob. You know, we could spend the rest of the show going over history because we know it. UNLV and Kentucky both had undefeated seasons and lost. And UNLV lost in the Final Four game against Duke, and Kentucky lost also in the Final Four game against Wisconsin. Indiana remains the 1976 yes. Indiana team, the 76. Last team to go undefeated and win the national championship. That was the Quinn Buckner, Kent Isaiah May, Thomas. Scott May. No, Kent no. Benson. Isaiah was he was at 81, 82 in that vicinity.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So yeah, I used to follow all those teams back in the day. As a Kentucky fan, I'm rare. I actually liked Louisville and Indiana, but I've just got to where I can't. I don't enjoy college basketball the way I used to. I mean, we don't want to spend too much time on this, but the officiating, not against my team, it seems like it influences the games in college basketball more than any other athletic contest, even football.
It's probably true. And as a Kentucky fan, you guys whine more than anybody else.
I set myself up for that
though. In the league, so I get that. No, actually, and I'm kind of the same way. And here's the thing for me in this this is the old guy talking here. But, you know, back in the day, Brian Daniel, they, you know, guys would stay for three, four years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like the Cougs team, you know, the Faisalama Jama back in the day, the guys went all the way through. So you had Clyde Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon and those guys. And they
Larry Meshaw.
Larry Meshaw, Reed Geddes. Yep, all those. But they, you know, they would build a team. They'd be, they were like the Gonzaga of then, but all the teams did that. So Michael Jordan went through what, his sophomore year, or did he go junior?
He may have gone three. Yeah.
Yeah. Junior. So they at least stayed 2 or 3 years. And so you would get these units that would move through, which created a better product at the end of the day. Cause I mean, you look at like a Gonzaga and somebody like that, a Kansas State, and it's actually better basketball than a Kentucky or a Duke or somebody like that that gets these ones and dones, I think, personally. So off the old person high chair. I thought it'd be fun. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is not wasted transition space. We are setting, we are setting it up. We're teeing it up for teeing today's it up. Show. Yeah, we're just whetting the appetite of the listeners out there. And getting in the spirit of this March Madness, right?
Yep. And at this point, when this rolls, this coming up weekend is going to be the Final Four for the men's NCAA. So I thought it would be fun to talk
here
about.
Here we go. Yeah.
Do our own bracket, and there may be money on this. We'll see. Of the Final Four of groups systems. No money? Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think we don't want to condone that element of the pastime.
That's true. That's true. Dual Kings or whatever probably wouldn't have it on their app.
No,
they
probably
wouldn't. They could just combine two of them. I have no idea. But yeah, so we're gonna do our Final Four of groups systems now.
Ooh, that's such a great idea.
Yeah, you like that? I came up with that.
I do.
On my own, all by myself. Came up with four, and we're not going to do a 64. This is just going with four, and it's
but
not really.
That the, be something. If
that
we
would
did
be interesting.
A 64.
Have you seen the one they're doing CCM, like the best CCM bands of all time?
No,
they're down
there's
to the
a bunch of those out there. I've seen
down
one
to the championship
cereal.
Yeah, they're down to the championship, the CCM one. But anyway, so we're just going to jump ahead and say we've got the Final Four, and this does not mean. Please save your hate mail for Brian Daniel. Don't send it to me. This doesn't mean there aren't other systems that are great. This doesn't mean these are the best. But I tried to come up with four that kind of differentiate themselves enough where we can have a little bit of a conversation about positives and negatives, right? So, I mean, you look at the University of Houston Cougars this year. They've got their positives. They're tough on defense. They're the best defensive team in the league, but they also, they're not the greatest 3-point shooters and their guard is hurt. So every system, every team's going to have its pluses and minuses. So we're going to kind of weigh that out a little bit. I don't know that we'll come up with a winner because that doesn't seem right to me because then you got losers and none of these are loser systems. But anyways, we'll see what happens. What do you think, Brian?
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Okay.
I like the idea of the bracket. But I think we'd need some listener input on that and not just between the two of us, because I don't know that we're going to be unanimous, but yeah.
No, that's true. Me and you may not come up with the same winner. All right. So here's the four as we line up our brackets, we've got the free market system. And I'm just going to say, this is probably the number one seed just because I think there's probably more churches that do this system than the other three. It's a
is
very popular
right?
system. I would definitely say that.
That surprises
yeah.
me.
No, no, it doesn't.
Really? Out of all small group churches, this is the number one
well,
seed.
If you take these four systems, I think this is the one that probably the most churches do. And it's free market. And we'll get into the plus and minus in just a second. We'll come back. But basically, you can study, a group can study anything they want to. So they could study the Psalms. They could study something in the New Testament. Or they could be a running group. Or a bunch of guys that get together on the weekend to smoke cigars. Have heard of it, you know, so it can be pretty much anything. It can be a small group. So taking what people already do, making it a small group, a la free market. Number two seed, I'm going to call this one the number two seed because I think it has caught on, and it's a little bit of the same free market, but a little bit different, is the two friends model. And I got this from Saddleback. This is the system that they've been running for a long time, where basically you have two friends. If you have two friends, gather them together and you can be a group. So it's putting the onus on the people to start their own groups, basically, is what this is. The way it would be a little bit different from free market is, at least at Saddleback, they have curriculum. So they give them curriculum, they give them training, and off they go. So that's the number two seed.
So is the thinking here on the by the selection committee that this is the number two seed? This would be the second most churches would use this approach?
I'm guessing on that. Out of these four. So that was just unscientific. The selection committee had some words over this morning, but we feel like it's number two. Number three is closed small group system. So basically groups get together a couple weeks, they have some signups, and then they close for a determined amount of time, a year, 2 years, whatever it is. And they don't invite new people. They don't put new people in the group. It's more for accountability, high accountability, that kind of a thing. So that's closed.
So this would be like if my group was meeting at, you know, some location, it may be on campus and maybe you're off campus, and we're going to take on Experiencing God. That's a closed group.
Yeah. And you're not going to invite anybody into it. So this will be an entire system.
Well, once you start.
Yes. So North Point, we'll use examples on all of them, but North Point's a good example of the closed system. Most of their groups get together 12, 24 months. They stay together closed. And then the last one, the number four seed, but they are mighty, is the missional system. So the idea of basically going out and making your community your group. So if you live in an apartment complex, inviting your neighbors or your subdivision, your cul-de-sac or whatever that looks. I think it's a little bit like two friends, but you're being very intentional about the location. So the people you do life with on a daily basis should become your group. And in some cases it's your church for the most part. Does that all make sense? You good on
yeah.
Brian? Okay.
Yeah, it does make sense.
So we got our seating.
Yeah. Yeah. So where does like a Long Hollow church go? So a Long Hollow, they 3 or 4 times a year, they open everything up. Groups are opening up. You get in your groups and you're somewhat closed during that season. And I think they might take a downtime during the summer. It feels like there's three big, they're not campaign seasons, but kind of feel like it's where they put a lot of energy behind and open it up in group. Does that go under closed or does that go under free market? Because what they don't do is the affinity type stuff. They wouldn't have a runners group. It would be all discipleship right. based.
I would, for the sake of this argument, I would put them under closed okay. because I think free market, and let's do that. Let's define each one a little bit and talk about pluses and minuses. So let's start with the mighty number one seed, the free market system. And we've already kind of talked about them a little bit, but some good examples of churches that do it and do it well. One would be
National Community Church,
Heather Zimple's church. We've had her on the show several times. They've been doing it for a long time. I've had her talk on the show about Pastor how it works. Yeah. Mark Patterson. Yep. Another good example is Church of the Highlands. A lot of churches are copying their group system and they do kind of a hub, but it's through the free market. Anybody can do groups. So let's do pluses and minuses and see if you agree with these, Brian. So pluses of a free market system is you can get a lot of people into groups because you're opening up the boundaries of what can be a group. So you're not asking people to conform to what you as the church leader are saying is a group, you know, this curriculum or meet this place or this night or whatever your boundaries are. You're saying whatever you're doing can be a small group. So that gets you a lot of people into groups. Right. Another positive is you can get a lot of people as leaders because the bar is very, very low for being a leader. If you are gathering people for any reason at all, you can be a leader of a small group. Any other positives that you can think of?
Well, it's at least overlapping and maybe redundant, but I think it scores real high on just what I would call community, because because of the factors you've already identified. It's easy to get leaders and it's easy to aggregate. You don't really there's no polity or structure that you're filtering things through. So it feels like it's just a high energy way to get people together in biblical communities. So
I think it's very true. That is at the heart of a free market system is community. It starts with community. Now let's go into some of the negatives. I think that a negative is you're not always going to be deep into the word. You're not going to be studying scripture necessarily. I don't know how much true discipleship happens in a group that they will tell you the goal is to start at that superficial level and then move them into more of a relationship. And if that happens, that's great. I just think it's harder when you start at that superficial level to get anywhere beyond that, you know, much beyond that. So I would say that's a negative. Anything else you think might be a negative?
Yeah. I think it's the same thing. Once again, I think just the lack of a defined pathway attached to this, it comes up a little short on the scale. I think it also unfairly puts so much of the weight of discipleship and spiritual development on Sunday morning services, whereas you have this whole additional ministry that's a part of your church that is not being considered at the height of disciple making, I would say. I'm struggling with my words here because I don't want to be critical, because this does have its pluses, and in the end, what we're probably going to talk about is hybrids. You know, if ideally you kind of pick and choose from all of these, but I'm just not a fan. On the one hand, like we've had Ashley Anderson on the show, and yes. Ashley talks about the coffee clubs up at Church of the City in Manhattan. And I really like the idea because they tend to be younger and that church, their congregants, and they're already in community. There's a lot of foot traffic. So they're already out and about. And so they just say, well, while you're out and about, we're going to aggregate in these coffee clubs. And I think that is a really cool idea as long as that's leading to something. And right. Ashley talked about the path that they have, and that's just part of their program. But it's like on the outside of these concentric circles, like what Saddleback would have, that's in the crowd. As a part of integrating. And what I've seen of free market, just even though I think they would espouse that and they would say, yeah, we do that, it's not built within the structure. That's a long way of answering that question, but that's how I would articulate it.
And that's a generalization. All of these, like you said, there's hybrids, and you probably have a hybrid at your church. But yeah, there has to be a destination. Where are you wanting the groups to get to? And if you can run a free market system and have a destination of discipleship and getting into God's word, then that's great.
And on the flip side, let me just add this real quick. I think there is merit to letting groups be whatever they will be. Mm-hmm. So there are degrees. Like you can be studying the doctrine of humanity, or you can be meeting together and running and doing bike rides once a week on Saturday morning. There is merit to biblical community across that spectrum. Yes. And I think that needs to be acknowledged. That I remember Bill Donahue talking about he compared it to throwing darts, that you get so worried about hitting the bullseye that you forget the joy of just throwing darts with a friend. There is merit to just believers getting together and doing life together. And then, but again, that means Sunday morning really has to be what the group ministry is not. And you need to be mindful of that. So
you got to supplement.
It's really interesting. It's a really interesting conversation.
I guess yeah. And we could, I mean, we've done whole shows on free market and we could do that again, but we got to move on, Brian. So number one, just by volume, that's the only reason they were number one. I think that they have a lot of churches that do that. Let's go with number four. Cause if it was a bracket, you'd have number one playing number four at this point, probably. And number four will be the missional system. And I would say that this system as a pure missional system had its heyday a few years ago. I don't think it's as big of a system now. Austin Stone would be an example of a church that was really going all in on this. And a church that I was at for a long time, Seacoast, did it missional groups for a while. So at a pure level, the idea is that you are gathering together with people that you're doing life with in your vicinity of the place that you live. So being missional with your cul-de-sac, with the people in your apartment building, and that's who you're doing life with, and that's who you're going to do your group with. There's a lot of different versions of missional groups, but at the heart of it, that's what it is. So instead of the church saying, we have these groups for you to join and you're going to do this curriculum, instead of that, we are going to empower you to send you out as missionaries in your community to start your groups. Churches that were all the way into this, sometimes they would meet only one time a month. I know a church in Texas, a mega church that decided to do this. They would meet one time a month together as a body. And then the other 3 weeks you were expected to meet in your missional communities. So that's just a pure definition of what we're talking about. That's what it is. Pluses of it is you're reaching the people that you're doing life with. You know, you're not just leaning over the fence and talking about the day's events. You're actually getting together and getting into the Bible, and that's just, that makes sense when you think about it. So really, there's some good pluses. Some of the minuses are it's hard. It's really, really hard.
Aspirational.
Yes. I remember talking to somebody at Austin Stone. This is several years ago. And we were like, so how many people do you have in groups, you know, doing this missional system? And they were like, oh, we're at about 10%, you know, because it's hard. It's really hard. So,
anyways. Well, I would say that's just very much contextualized. It very much contextualized. Again, using like some of the churches I'm familiar with out west, where one of my daughters lives, and in Manhattan, where another daughter live. And when I visit with leaders, when I go visit Ashton and Skylar, Manhattan and Church of the City, or 1CC, where my daughter Skylar goes to, this could very easily work, because your context is your block, and it is doing life together. We use that term a lot, but in suburban Nashville, where I live, I don't do life with the people in my cul-de-sac. I would actually love to have more of that. We're pretty close to a family across the street, and they moved, and the family that moves in, man, their doors are shut, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think this is aspirational. I would say it scores high on heart, and it scores really low on literal, like, just functionality.
Functionality.
And we've done this before, and, you know, I felt like it was moderately successful, but again, so hard to sustain.
Puts a lot of pressure on the leader. The leader has to basically
do everything.
Has to be the teacher, has to be the shepherd, has to be all of these things. And that's where I see it breaking down a lot, is that you just can't get a lot of people that are willing to do that or can live up to that. So pluses and minuses. I would say the missional as a pure system probably doesn't exist a lot of places, but you'll probably have groups that, like you said, that can live within that because it's just a natural part of their life where they are.
Yeah.
All right.
And they're used to it. All that. It's,
yes.
But I would say when it works, this might be the most beautiful one.
Oh, it's biblical. I mean, it really is biblical. Yes, I love it when it works. And if you can develop that in where it does work, it's a beautiful thing. So let's go now to the number two. So we're doing number two and number three at this point. And
number
this is just
seed.
By volume, yeah. Number two seed.
And
I said
the
it's the two friends.
West region, American region. North America
two friends.
Region.
And I also think you can lump in campaign with this, because Saddleback's the one that kind of really made that a big deal. But the idea is that if you have two friends, you can gather a group together. And we're going to help you do that by launching these campaigns that are going to give you curriculum. We'll give you training through DVDs back in the day. Now it's all online streaming. We'll give you a coach to walk alongside you. But, you know, the pluses of this one is anybody can gather a group. It's a lot like the free market system. Anybody can do the group. If you have a couple of friends, you can do a group. It smashes the bar for leadership. because, in fact, they call them hosts and not leaders on purpose, because you're hosting a group. You're not being asked to actually lead a group. So that's plus. You get a lot of people, and people just naturally want to invite people to their group. You know, the mentality I see a lot of times with groups is, please put people in my group. You know, church, I'm going to start a group now. Give me people. And that doesn't always work. And I love the idea of, that's great, now go invite people to be a part of your group. So that's the system. Those are some of the pluses. I think minuses, and I've run a system basically just like this. And one of the minuses is, some of the groups are not going to be great. They're going to be not the best quality. You know, there, some of them are going to dissolve pretty quickly. Sometimes you can get hosts or leaders that are not what you would naturally choose as a host or a leader. And that's okay. You know, the one, those you don't put on your website, you don't tell people you're advertising them. But overall, I think it's a really good blend of a lot of different systems. Any thoughts?
I would say it scores real high on organization. You know, it's a calendar. It's a calendar event. And I would say the biggest problem for me in with this particular system is that it doesn't really self-perpetuate itself. It feels like you're always having to start it over again. You're putting the key in the ignition. Every time you run a campaign, you're cranking it up again. I mean, that's not absolutely true, but that's what it feels like. And to people that are in the groups, I think there's some pros and cons to knowing that it ends at some point as well. So if this experience is not great, I know that it's going to end. And if it's going well, then I know that I can pick it up. But to have those natural pauses is probably, there is an upside to that. But I don't like that. I'm not the biggest fan of that mentality that we're going to start this and it ends on this date and then we do something else. I love the idea of, I'm going to build these relationships over time. I mean, and every small group leader out there knows about multiplication and, you know, the lifespan of a group. So, you know, that's a part of it, but this is too built in for me, too mechanical.
Gotcha.
As the negative. I mean, there's obviously positives, but.
And that's using it with the campaign as well. So what Brian's talking about, if you do like a 6-week campaign, you tell people to gather for 6 weeks and then hopefully you get them to do 6 more weeks. Saddleback has actually moved away. They don't do as many campaigns anymore. They just did their first one in several years, like a couple of years ago. But so that's some of the things you have to watch out for is you get people excited for that campaign. And then when it's over, it just kind of goes
away. The air's out of the room. But on the other side, just to iterate what you've already said, but reiterate what you've already said, in terms of getting people engaged and giving them this period of time that this engagement is for, because these days, let's face it, we have a fear of commitment.
Yes.
And so I need to know how I get out of this if it's not working for me, not me, but that's the mentality of most people. And so this really addresses that right away. And so I was talking with Steve one time and he said, yeah, we understand that. I forget what statistic he said, but 4 out of 10 groups that we start are not going to continue meeting. But guess what? We just grew groups by 6 out of 10 or whatever those numbers are. So I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. I get it.
And I've done that system and it can work and get a lot of people in the group. So it's great. All right. Our last one.
Third seed.
Yes. Is 2 versus 3. And that would be closed groups that, like we talked about, North Point has done this for several years. There's a lot of examples of this where the, you'll have an emphasis about groups. Probably once or twice a year, and groups will gather for a week or two, open, getting people into the group. And then the idea is that they close and they do, a lot of times it's determined by the study length. So you might do something that's experiencing God. And during that study, you're going to stay closed, not put anybody else into it. Or some will go, you know, 24 months and they'll not add anybody into it. The pluses of this one is, I mean, it's obvious. It's accountability. It's we're going to gather together as a group and we are not going to add anybody, so we can really share our lives. We can be open with each other. We're going to know each other inside and out. And so it's a safe, accountable type place to be. So that's a real positive. Negative for me is I like for my groups to be open to inviting somebody to their group, you know, always looking for that person in their life that, hey, this would benefit. And so you can't have that when you have a closed group. And also it's harder for new people when they come into the church during the wrong time to get into a group. So if groups have already launched, they want to get into a group, it's hard because most of the groups are closed. What about you? What do you think about the closed?
Yeah, that's what we're running into with the transition we're making right now with, we're kind of on the beginning edge on is it's a closed group church, and their next opening is not till April. So, but they, to their credit, they promote it. I know it is in April and I know how it starts. And then it appears it's one of those deals to where you form a group out of this like campaign and then that's your group. So it's a little bit of the Saddleback campaign model, but really more of the closed group. What I like about this is the intensity and intentionality. I really like that. The fact that we're going to start this journey together, and it's life and it's very human to me. But I think, yeah, the downside I would describe as the rigors. This is, in this model, you get kind of all of the rigors of what group life is. You know, it's the same people. It's the
same conversations.
Some of the same stuff. And so you don't get the turnover, and it is a commitment. But I think we should not be afraid of commitments these days. So I appreciate the boldness of saying, yeah, we're going to ask you to put some skin in the game, which is what closed groups does. I think how you approach your discussion or curriculum is really important in a closed group setting. I think to get on one thing and stay on it that appeals to like one affinity within the group, like, at Lifeway, we think in terms of the starting points, application, theology, and text. Mm-hmm. So if you get on just text or say just theology because the leader just has an acumen for theology and you just stay there for 6 months, that just wears people out. So I think as long as you're mindful of turning that over or doing like a marriage study.
Doing fresh things within that closed group.
Yeah. I think that is really helpful. But you just have to be mindful of that and take days off and just not be breaks. Overbearing. Yep. But this is the one that I'm drawn to the most, but it's also the one that I have the most experience with.
Yeah. I think you're right on all those points. You got to keep it fresh. Groups will go toxic if there's not freshness in them, whether that's inviting new people, doing a different type of curriculum, pushing people out of their boundaries of what they're comfortable with topics, all of that. So I think that's good. I'm going to give you a winner. You're going to love this. All right. So we've got the final four.
Baseball wins.
Baseball wins always. But here's my theory. What if the final four in basketball was U of H, Alabama, UConn, and I'm getting my divisions mixed up. I don't know who would be in the other one at this point, but we'll say Gonzaga. Okay. And they all decided to take the best player best two players from each team and make one team. And that would be the best team. Oh, I think that would win the groups system final four. If you had groups that were reaching out to their friends and inviting people, and you had groups that were intentionally being missional about their neighbors, if you had groups that were getting accountability and
high function,
and you had all of that and you had that going at one time, it could be a really beautiful winning system.
So well, you said it. You declared a winner. I like it. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Group Answers Show. Thanks, Chris, for bringing this fun topic during this fun time of year to us. Appreciate everyone hanging in there for this episode. A little bit longer than others. And just in that spirit, we'd love to hear a review or a rating wherever you listen to us, and if you have an option, choose subscribe. Look forward to being with you again on down the road. This is Brian Daniel for Chris Surratt.